You're listening to the In the Money Players Podcast. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornatal, back with you from the Little House on the East Side, joined once again by a man. He's not sitting next to me, but he's just across town. He is back from his little sojourn to Del Mar. We'll find out how that worked out. He's also the People's Champion, Jonathan Kinchin. What's up?
PTF, I'm back. Last night I was a little bit like a caged animal who got loose on the town for the first time. I wouldn't trade it for the world, but these last 3 weeks I've been here, I've had Austin, so I've had a curfew and haven't got to get out much. And last night I found myself playing Flip Cup and all kinds of nuts.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Flip Cup. Let me take a guess. If you're hanging out late, it's Saratoga, caged animal, double R. Rich Averill, I'm smelling that he was somehow involved in these, juvenile drinking games. Am I onto something here?
No, I just broke my maiden with him, but I met him out for one quick one, and then I ended up going to a small little house gathering where the Flip Cup took place.
Interesting. Anybody I know?
Prominent track announcer, a couple other guys that you probably would know.
Is one of them now referring to himself as white chocolate?
I hope so.
Do you know what I'm referring to?
No, I don't know who that is.
Okay, I can only assume that you're talking about, and you mentioned a prominent track announcer. Oh, there's two in town. I was thinking you might have been hanging out with the stars from the PDJF benefit the other night for their Slim Shady version, talking Larry Colmus and the Big A, Anthony Stabile. But now I realize it's also just as likely you were talking about Churchill Downs as Travis Stone. So anyway, you don't have to reveal, but the rhymes being dropped the other night by the Big A. I hope you've seen. I know you couldn't be there being out of town, but it was a very impressive display from both competitors the other night over at Jockey Karaoke. And we talk on this show sometime about how JK got rhymes. I'm curious to see what your professional opinion is of the Big A, and what do you think of his future as an MC?
The clip that I saw was the Big A wrapping up, so I actually haven't seen him do his, but I did see Larry's, and that was not very fun to watch. With love, of course, with love.
Oh, I mean, man, he A for effort, and the intro, his intro was phenomenal. It got the blood pumping. I was impressed by them. I was impressed by the jockeys. It was a great display, all for a great cause. It was a pleasure to be a part of it, the fine work they do. And speaking of charity events, if you listen to this right away, and we are going to do a truncated show to get it up quickly, and you can still join us, I made the executive decision to add fried chicken to the event tonight at my own expense. We'll have about 40 pieces of fried chicken, which, the Capital OTB team will probably make short work of. And who's kidding? Who? I'll be a part of that as well. Great event, Racing City Brewery over on Excelsior, Gumbo for Horses. And if you can't make it, but you like the event, you want to encourage us to continue to do more fun get-togethers like this, you can still donate, or you can buy your tickets, trfinc.org/players. I'm going to be there. JK, you going to be there?
I am. I'm going to be there for sure. I'm going to go to do a little draw first at Sperry's. I believe the Whitney draw is at Sperry's tonight. So I'll do that, and then I'll hop on over to join you guys for some gumbo and horses.
I will say, JK, it's unlikely if you're not there right away that there'll be any chicken left, but there will be plenty of gumbo. I doubled the amount of gumbo. We have just the right amount of pre-orders where it's going to be a lively event, but not any kind of shipwreck. Don't hesitate to go thinking there's going to be too many people. And now that I've doubled the food, there's definitely going to be leftover, I would think. Well, maybe not leftover, but there'll be enough for everybody. It's going to be fun. Another thing, I just came up with a promotion idea last night while you were hanging out with unnamed race callers. I was down in Albany with a crew that included Doogie, my friend from L.A., Lower Albany, and Robbie Fazone, his son Caesar, and also Desiree and Rochelle from the Paddock Bar. And we were brainstorming about Sunday, specifically this Sunday, and we came up with the idea of Up in the Deck. We've had the deck privately the last few Sundays, but we had the idea to maybe share the wealth. It's been such a good scene up there on Sundays of doing something. Des just off the cuff called it Speakeasy Sunday, where I help out with the bartending. We do a bunch of cocktail specials, and we just invite people up, no cover, no minimum, just somewhere cool to sit on Sunday. If you're going to be around at the track Sunday and you like to drink cocktails, maybe let me know and we'll make sure to hold a seat for you. But there'll probably be some room up there throughout the day. I think it could be a lot of fun. What's your work schedule look like on Sunday? Can you tie one on?
I sure can. I got like an hour and a half on Sunday. So Saturday off, NBC, there's a short Saratoga Live show because of NBC. So I got a light load this week. Excellent.
I'm working on the cocktail menu. I'll consult with you on that, make sure there's something that you're up for. But I will say this. We're going to probably need some hair of the dog hangover cure type stuff because it is my birthday party Saturday night. And, you know, the last, I think, 3 years now, that's ended up with me swimming in a stranger or a near stranger's pool. So clearly alcohol involved. I have been true to my word, been very good, only drinking pretty much Saratoga water at the track. But we may have to get after it a bit this weekend.
Saratoga water, is that code word for something?
No, the actual.
I'm just kidding. Austin, we had a competition, not a competition. We kept count when he was here, how many Saratoga spring waters we had while he was here. We got up to 38.
That's pretty good. I had 12 on Sunday alone, so I think I got you guys beat. But we'll see. Well, there'll be some more fun competitions throughout the summer, none of it matching the competition we've seen on the racetrack. We're going to talk about the days at Saratoga, maybe give some horses to watch. But we need to check in about the Del Mar contest, and we might as well start with your trip out there and just in general what you were up to. We haven't even talked about this off air, so I'm just curious. How did it all go?
Well, the contest didn't go good, but I did have fun. Very good trip. We took the Uber, which is a good move. I'm telling you, it's a great move. Albany Airport can be very tricky, especially if you're traveling with more than one paying adult. I was the only paying adult when I traveled. I took an Uber down to JFK. It was $218.
Did you have any trouble like securing, did the Uber driver balk? Were they happy?
Nope.
Were they sad?
Easy work.
Great.
He was happy to do it. He said he'd done that trip like four times this week.
Oh, wow. Okay. I guess that's a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing. I think it's a thing people do. So he, I Ubered down, and Austin and I were fortunate enough with my flight benefits with the standby stuff. We got real first class, like lay down flat in a pod.
Boom.
First class. Austin loved that.
Fantastic.
So he slept. We slept by, you know, then we stayed at the airport at LAX. We got up the next morning. We flew to San Diego. We went to one of my favorite restaurants in La Jolla called Cody's for like brunch as soon as we landed. And the bad news about Cody's is it moved right around the corner. But I guess in San Diego or whatever, San Diego County, your liquor license doesn't transfer with the business. It's actually attached to the address. So I got up there. I ordered my favorite lobster roll. I got Austin pancakes and bacon. I said, what IPAs do you have? And I got the bad news.
That's terrible.
Oh, I'm already pot committed.
That's rough.
Then we met the man in black and his family and his significant other's birthday. So I met him, hung out with them for a little while, went to the pool and hung out and our kids played together. And then that was pretty much that night. And then what did we do on Saturday? Track, obviously. Went to Benny Southstreet's house after the races.
Fantastic.
He cooked us burgers, swam in his pool for a little bit. And then what else did we do?
Well, you can't talk about Benny Southstreet's house without I want to know your opinion of his various reptiles that he has. You know, the man is an amateur herpetologist, and I figured you'd be scared senseless by the snakes in Shea Benny.
I tell you what, if you didn't set me up with snakes, I wouldn't have known what a herpetologist was. Sounds like some bad night in college or something. But he is nuts. I will tell everyone that. Very nutty man, but he did make a good hamburger. Then he gave me the smallest serving of ice cream ever, which was
amazing. What was it, a thimble he used as the cup? I saw the picture. It was no bigger than half your thumb.
Yeah, it was nuts. And then Sunday morning, we had breakfast with Pegasus winning trainer Michael McCarthy.
Fantastic.
And his daughter Stella and his wife Erin and Austin and Stella played some games, and then we hopped back on the plane, got back to Austin for one night, and then got back here.
How'd you bust out of the contest? What went wrong?
I went all in and some doubles into the Bing Crosby, where I needed line judge, who was the four, recruiting ready, who was the seven, and Jalen's Journey, who was the eight. And I thought the two and the three, Sistron, I think Desert Law was the other horse's name, I thought they were going to hook up. And one of those horses would come running. Peter Miller's got his mojo back out there. And I thought that one of those two horses was going to run really well. And one of line judge was awful. Recruiting ready wasn't good enough. And Jalen's Journey did run pretty good. Ranged up for a second was my only chance when they turned for home, and it was no good. So it happens. Garrett Skiba, I noticed, was up in the top two or three, or I think he
ended up second and sixth. Garrett did. I did the whole rundown on the Bick show. If folks want to hear the whole segment, we didn't talk that much about it. But did you hear anything about the winner? The winner's not somebody I had ever heard of, and it was a very unusual way of winning a contest with an across the board bet on a long shot. But that wasn't the only play. It was certainly an earned victory. Actually, I'll go ahead and read down the top 10. But what did you hear about the winner or any of the other top finishers? Or did you hear nothing?
I didn't track on Sunday.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah, gotcha. So you weren't paying any attention.
I had $40. I think I had like $38 left on each of my entries, and I gave my cards to Benny Southstreet, and I never heard back from him. So I guess he didn't either withdrew the 38 and bought some more reptiles, or he didn't even bust it out.
He does have quite a collection. There's no doubt about it. And he was the one who actually sent me these results. I'll run them down real quick, because why the heck not? Melissa Margolis from Thousand Oaks, California, bet on a horse called Hit the Road at 9-1 to make 24K. Ends up winning in the field of 107 with over 42,000. And I'll just run down the top seven who got the BC seats. Melissa Margolis, Garrett Skiba, your boy Brett Wiener, Loyal Sprague, Gary West, Garrett Skiba again, and then our friend from the Horse Player World Series, former champion Dan Kaplan. So there you go. There's your top seven from Del Mar. Very successful contest. Hoping to have some more Del Mar content on the show soon. Not sure if you were paying attention. Clearly you weren't paying attention, but John Camardo did a really smart write-up of the Bing Crosby that pointed directly to the winner. Hoping he's going to be willing to share more of his tools. We've got so much stuff happening on the blog right now. I don't know if you've seen any of it. Marshall Sterling is officially on board. He's going to be making posts when he has more than 240 characters. He'll do a forecast. He could even use pictures on the InTheMoneyPodcast.com blog, then provide updates in real time on Twitter. I think that's going to work out very well for racing fans who are looking for an update on the weather. Frank Scatoni made an amazing counter tweet about how he'll gladly provide the Del Mar forecast for free for the rest of the meet. It's 72 and sunny.
The weather was nice. You know, it was a little bit hot, actually, to be honest with you. I mean, there was a point where I was like, dang, the sun's kind of beating me up a little bit. But it was nice for sure. The weather there is always, always fantastic. It's one of the positives of that place for sure.
Did you see Frank out there for a minute?
I did. I was hanging out with Nick Tamaro and the, I don't know what the name of the restaurant is, Ill Patio or Palio or whatever it is.
Palio, the Palio.
They had two betting machines in there.
Yeah, the Palio.
And there's like a huge party.
In Del Mar
so
Plaza,
like you,
right?
What's that?
In Del Mar Plaza, the Palio or Il Palio?
Yeah, Il Palio. So I just kept, when I was betting, I just was going next door to the press box, to the media room. So I saw Frank every time I went in there.
Oh, okay. It was a restaurant on the track, not okay. Anyway, it's not the Del Mar Plaza. That's something.
It's
else.
Like actually the
I got
at
you.
The track. Yeah,
I
it's like the, some dining room they have there that was not my favorite place to sit at Del Mar.
But. I've misspent many days at the Del Mar press box, but it's also the site of, and I'll write about this someday. I tried to write about it long ago. There's a long story about me trying to write about it that I'll spare you. Not one of my finer moments. Anyway. But one of the greatest moments of my racing life with Frank, and our mentor and friend, the great racing writer William Murray, putting in a $48 ticket one day, picking up at a bias, and cashing for $8K early in the handicapping and betting career. And I still think back on that day and how magical it was and how nice it was to have a nice little hit like that with, especially with what we were betting at that point, with a friend like Bill, who I think about all the time this time of year, whenever I see Del Mar. So that's very, that's cool. I like the Del Mar press box getting a call on here. These days, don't set foot in the press box. We're pretty much up. I've pretty much been up on the veranda constantly. Only one day downstairs and then half a day in the 1863. But I feel very ensconced up on the veranda, and folks looking to see what that's all about, you know, reach out, make a reservation with me. Happy to set you up downstairs at the paddock bar or upstairs. And we're going to be hopefully making some changes to the veranda to make it even more comfortable beyond the few tables there that are actually comfortable, like super comfortable right now. Still a great way to avoid the lines and have a good time. We look forward to having you back. JK, you were definitely missed when you were out there in California. Any other thoughts on the Bing Crosby before we talk about some of these other stakes races over the weekend?
No, I didn't really have anything else. I don't know if you noticed on Sunday, it was Arrogate's half-sister won and won easy, very impressively. So that was fun for Bob Baffert. I noticed that in the early race yesterday. I'm drawing a blank, obviously, on what her name is now. Immediate Impact is her name. So,
if only there were a way we could look these things up, JK. If only were a way.
Of course. No, I got it right, though. I knew. Immediate Impact.
Oh, pretty funny. I thought now I like that now you're a professional broadcaster. You never do stuff like that to your Fox colleagues, but you're still perfectly happy to just throw me under the bus. So that's good. That's good.
And whatever it takes, whatever it takes.
Let's talk about some more stuff from the weekend. Anything else you want to talk about that's non-Saratoga, or we can change direction and just roll through these Saratoga cards maybe back to front. But I don't want to give short shrift to anything else at Del Mar or anywhere else around the country that you might have watched.
No, I missed Saratoga. So I'm happy to get back to Saratoga, but I guess it's probably appropriate that we give Enable and Crystal Ocean a shout out on the show.
That's where I was going to go. We actually handicapped the race and gave the trifecta cold, me and Pat. Not that it was that hard, certainly not the first two. But I mean, you know, Waldgeist was a price and there was a case to be made against. But I thought it was a good opportunity to fade the narrative. He ran sneaky well in the Prince of Wales and ends up getting the third spot. But why should I be talking about that when we should be talking about one of the great throwdown stretch battles that I've ever seen in my life, frankly. It was amazing. And Enable just keeps showing more. I mean, the stretch drive is all you saw when you watched it on Twitter. But watch the whole race, and you see that she's tactically not in a great spot and overcomes it, and then still has enough punch in the lane to win a race where it looked for a second like she wasn't going to win. I mean, she's just so awesome. I'm really hoping that we get to see this story end, not just with a third Arc de Triomphe, but also with a second Breeders' Cup Turf. What were your thoughts, JK?
Yeah, just one of those stretch runs that give you goosebumps. At least that was my feeling when watching it. It's just two horses that are showing a tremendous amount of heart, neither one of them wanted to lose. And it was really interesting to see that late in the race, Frankie put the stick away and was just riding her. And she was doing that kind of on her own with just the mild encouragement. Well, I don't want to call it mild encouragement. It was a full drive. And it's cool when you watch that angle from the inside rail where Crystal Ocean actually puts his head in front for a second. And then she comes back and then draws away and ends up, you know, drawing away impressively in the end.
Before we dive to Saratoga, JK, I just want to make sure listeners are aware of what's going on. We haven't talked about this in a while, but our friends at the Breeders' Cup and horseplayers.com, No Takeout Tuesday has become a thing. happening today if you get a chance to listen. If not, it's going to be happening the rest of the summer as well. And there's no better way to start your journey to the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge than to play for free. Some cool games coming up this weekend as well. No matter what your bankroll is, on the lower end, you've got a $179 contest. That is, I believe, one per 65. You've also got, that's again, if I didn't say it, a live format contest. You've got a live guaranteed $500 contest, one per 23. And then you've got the high roller pick and pray. This is probably more your speed. Wouldn't be surprised if we see your name on the leaderboard in here. $1,000, and that's a one per 11. So it's not too early. I mean, I feel like as soon as Saratoga ends, my focus goes entirely to, and this year more than ever, with Woodbine being our partners, but the goes to the Woodbine Mile Day. And then from there, you know, obviously you've got Keeneley, you've got Belmont, you've got Santa Anita, you've got great racing, but that great racing is all really getting serious on the road to the Breeders' Cup. And the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, as far as I'm concerned, is the best way to participate in betting in the Breeders' Cup. First of all, if you're going to spend that money anyway, why not participate in the prize pool? But second of all, after taking a look at the plays that were published at the end of last year's BCBC, there's a lot of people in there who aren't playing to win or don't have a chance to win. There's a lot of inefficiency. If I were a sharp player, I mean, I don't care about the parimutuel takeout. If you're a sharp horse player, not even talking about a winning horse player, if you're a sharp horse player, I believe the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge is a positive expectation just because of the amount of people who qualify in who I don't believe are playing to win and or don't have the chops to win. It's something that folks should be taking a long and serious look at. And, you know, all the better, get action while you qualify your spot by playing on horseplayers.com this weekend and beyond. Any chance we'll see your name on there on Saturday? Did my sales pitch work to you?
Yeah, no, look, I love those situations. I think that there's no better feeling than showing up to Breeders' Cup, wherever it happens to be, and not having to hand anyone $10,000 and getting to play in the contest. So anytime that you can find an expectation, a positive expectation, you know, a takeout-free situation on Tuesdays, or even just the low-ratio situations that they're going to have, I think that there's really an opportunity there to try to get your seat rather than having to try to win it in. Or buy it, you know, rather than trying to buy it. So
win it rather than buy it. And there's qualifiers, of course. I won't run down the whole thing, but take a look over at horseplayers.com and you can check that out. It's definitely something to be looking at. You hit me with a yeah, no there. Does that mean that you will not be playing in the BCBC qualifiers on Saturday, or were you just making an ummer and er?
No, no. Yeah, I believe you. I've explained those before. I'm not in the right mindset.
It's nonsense. Your explanation is utter nonsense. But anyway, you're dodging the question. That's okay. I'm just proud that I haven't heard a yeah, no yet on the Fox airwaves. And I think we'll be happy. The team did a great job without you. Some great info on there over the weekend in our spot. We have the audio on the Fox broadcast, but of course it will be nice to see your friendly face up there as well. Let's move on to Saratoga. Let's start with Sunday. I think I know what the headline is, and I think you do too. I'll let you speak first.
Yeah, the Chancelot was freaky. and the funny part about it is I tweeted, and I mean this, like, I had been hearing from numerous people with numerous reasons to have good information say that Jorge Navarro had said this is the best horse he ever trained. And then I thought to myself, well, what about XY Jet? What about Sharp Azteca? I knew that this horse was going to run well. But at the same time, it's like you hear that all the time. You always hear about the next fastest horse in the world, and they either barely win, kind of win, or run up the track. And this situation was none of those. This horse absolutely galloped, had a 121 buyer, 133 time form US as a three-year-old coming in his third career start. He had worked, I think, 56-3 on the main track. And from what I understand, all the clockers thought that was a phenomenal work. It wasn't just, it wasn't just going fast. It was going fast the right way. I think he is without a doubt going to be an overwhelming favorite in the Allen Jerkins, and he should be based on the performance that he gave on Sunday.
I don't have much to add. I think you covered it pretty well. No, I will ask you this: who at this moment are you more excited about for the Breeders' Cup sprint? And I'll give you three names: Chancelot, Imperial Hint, and I'm going to throw Mattioli in there. You're on the record pick for the race.
Yeah, it's tricky. First of all, Imperial Hint ran phenomenally. I mean, I thought he was very impressive the way that he took over it, like right outside the 3/8 pole with against good horses. And like, I mean, he was freaky good too as well, breaking the track record on Saturday. But you know, he's kind of a hit or miss type. You know, sometimes he runs well, then he has these clunkers, and so I'm still not fully convinced I can trust him. But I will tell you that the 6 furlongs for him, I think, is probably better than it is for Mattioli. Now, the way that Mattioli, it all unfolded for Mattioli, he had every reason in the world to not run well, right? I mean, he had Strike Power, who Johnny said in an interview was absolutely going to the front no matter what. So Ricardo really didn't have a choice. He, you know, he could have tried to take back, but, you know, he got a talented horse who likes to run towards the front, who's won 2 Grade 1s this year. What are you going to, you know, what are you going to wrangle him back and try to go around? And maybe that would have been a better opportunity than what he got. And he's also, you know, I would imagine that Steve probably took it easy on Mattioli after the Met Mile. I'd heard a lot of reports that he was, you know, extremely tired after the Met Mile, and rightfully so, the way that he ran. So I just think that it was just kind of a perfect storm of all these bad things happening, not to mention the rail.
Yeah, you didn't even mention to me the number one thing, the rail.
Right, yeah. The rail being the, you know, not an ideal place to be. Don't tell Gary Stevens and Andy Serling that.
Did you witness that debacle?
No, I just got a bunch of text messages. And then I called Gary. I called Gary and talked to Gary that night, which obviously was very entertaining. But
oh my goodness. For those who don't know, there was a discussion of I don't think that Gary I didn't hear the whole thing. I understand. I have to imagine Gary understood that the rail wasn't the place to be, but the specific argument was a certain horse in a certain race that would have won had it not. I think Andy made the point, and I agree with Andy on this, frankly, that and I wish I could remember the names of the horses. If only there was a way to look this stuff up, where a horse went down to the rail and it presumably cost the horse the victory, which is how Andy saw it, which is how I saw it. Chateau was the winner of that race. I'm forgetting the name of the horse that went down to the rail. Anyway. I don't want to make it sound like we thought that Gary was saying there wasn't a bias, because I thought there was a pretty clear bias. I mean, even into Sunday, if you watch closely, even some rides that I thought watching the pan, oh, maybe the rail's better, that you'd look and you'd see the horse never went inside the two path. So anyway, for me, it was definitely the rail was a major factor in it. I'm tempted to get you to tell more about your conversation with Gary and make you talk out of school, but that one might be best saved for a podcast after dark.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, it's they're two men who have strong opinions. Gary's a Hall of Fame rider who made his livelihood on the backs of animals making decisions. Andy's made his livelihood as a handicapper and a horse player. And those two opinions are different from time to time about who's wrong and who is right and who did this and who did that. And it's just two guys disagreeing about something. And, whatever. I don't think it's anything. They're actually must-see TV tomorrow. They're on together.
Oh, of course. If you're the boss, you gotta pair them up and hope there'll be more.
No,
fireworks.
The pairing was already done, though. Just to be clear, but they are on the desk tomorrow.
I thought it was like pro wrestling, you know. Okay, we got heat in the Serling Stevens feud. We'll see, you know, who wins the first fight and who's gonna put whom over at the pay per view. But
Lafitte will be officiating that one.
Guest referee Lafitte. I think that this is just a point I'll make, and I love, 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 love riders' perspectives on all this. I think Gary does a great job. I mean, as I've said on record many times, one of my favorite people to listen to talk about horses, who I think blends the horseman approach and the handicapper approach best in the world, is your other colleague, Richard Migliori. But I do think I get it. I mean, if I were a rider, I'd feel the same way. It'd be like, who the heck is this guy? He's never sat on a horse, bipped it a bit. But I think the skill sets, while related, are noticeably different. And the analogy I often use is you could be the best pilot in the world, and it doesn't mean you know how to build a plane. And vice versa, right? You could be a brilliant engineer who knows where, you know, every wire is meant to go. Probably a terrible analogy. Eric Bylock will tell me later. But you have no clue what you're doing in terms of flying a thing. They're different but related skills. And look, I get it. If I were a rider, I would probably hate listening to me analyze a race. But I do think for horse players, obviously, I wouldn't do it if I didn't think there was a tremendous amount of value in it. And I think both sides, generally speaking, are very respectful of the other and recognize that horsemen can learn a lot from horse players, and certainly horse players can learn a ton from horsemen, in my opinion. And it's funny because there are some horse players who are so in the tank that they don't want to hear about, you know, how the horse is doing physically or these nuances of riding them. And that might be right for their gambling personalities. Maybe those people do just need to stick to the numbers and dismiss anything else as narrative or maybe germane, but not germane to them. I think one thing that unites you and me, JK, is we try to, while we're obviously far, far, far more on the horse player side of the equation, if not completely on the horse player side of the equation, very interested in these perspectives and what we can glean and learn from the horseman side of things. And, you know, people who've taught me those lessons over the years, Sean Clancy, who we recently had on the In the Ring podcast, and Mike Maloney, who spent his time, as he detailed in his book, Betting with an Edge, on the backstretch to try to learn these things. Now, I think in his day-to-day world, I'd love to ask him this question. I'm going to guess he's going to say it's 90% paper stuff, lessons he learned from the Andy Byers of the world, and 10% of the, what you might say, softer factors that he learned on the backstretch. But you know what? 10%, 5%, 3% in this game can be the difference between winning and losing. What do you think of that?
Life in general is better lived when you have empathy and look into other people's perspective. The idea that you've got it all figured out usually leads to bad situations in all aspects of life.
Yeah, so I've seen that.
I've never sat on a horse. I've got no idea what it's like when you break from a gate and you've got seven other animals to your outside. I don't know what it's like pulling on the reins to try to pull a horse back out of a spot. I don't know if the connections told you to go. There's a million things that we don't know. And so I try not to speak in absolutes when it comes to decisions of other people, that I'm not privy to all the information that was involved in making that decision.
I think that's wise. All right. So my goal for the 30-minute show didn't work out too well, did it? We're 33 minutes in, more with the music, and we haven't gotten past Sunday. And I have a whole other thing from Sunday I'm going to make you talk about really quick. I'm going to write a piece about this for my At the Races column, and I'm going to see if Jim Mulvihill wants to publish it too in the newsletter there, the Churchill, it's not a newsletter, the Churchill print publication, because I'm proud of this article. And it's all about the concept of they knew. Is that a phrase that you've heard and know around, from your time around racing, JK, or is it older than you?
No, I've heard it, and I know it. I understand the concept.
Yeah, well, explain it in your words, then. Let me see if we understand it the same.
Well, I think the tricky part is the definition of who is they. I think we all probably have a little bit of a different definition. They, to me, is the wagering dollar, the public. You know, they knew. They knew the horse was going to run well, and that's why the horse that looked like it should be 4-1 on paper went off at 6-5 and 1-5.
How about 15-1 going off at 2-1? That was the case with Gilda Marie on Sunday. There's a whole story behind it. If we had more time, I'd do a whole tale from the track, but you've got shows to prep for. I've got deadlines. We've got an event. So I'm going to probably just tell people to read the piece I wrote about it, and I'll tweet about it. And if folks, I'll tweet out the piece. And if folks want to talk about it more, we'll talk about it more on another show. But definitely button up your thought before we move on.
Well, the horse worked with Uncle Cy.
Yes.
And outworked Uncle Cy. Yeah. So that was a big a big key to it, to the whole equation.
For sure. I mean, now that we went there, yeah, it sounded like it was two intersecting types of steam. There was sort of barn backstretch chatter out the wazoo and clockers who have, whose information is seen by and shared with professional bettors, and just like somehow everybody landed in the same place. I just couldn't believe how the money just kept coming in.
Right. It was that workout was in DRF too, though. I mean, just to be clear.
Yeah, yeah, right. It was. That's right. But I mean, I don't think the people. It was more than the people who buy the clocker report just hammered.
Oh, of course.
That was my only. I mean, that was my only point there.
Yeah, everyone knew. In fact,
they knew.
John Panigot like let me know like before, like, hey, I'm live in this race. So
him and everybody else. That's very, very funny. Yeah, anyway, I'm happy with my story about it, and I would have loved to have read it, but we don't have time for that. Let's move on to Saturday. I guess we started down this road a little bit, but why don't you take us down a little bit further with some of your Saturday Saratoga thoughts?
I mean, I guess we should maybe hop. I mean, I don't really have a lot to add about Imperial Hint. I think unless you have more things to say about him or
all
Matoli,
I was going to say, I do have something to say about Imperial Hint, which is this has happened to me before. And the story I always tell is found in the Breeders' Cup turf when I went down to the paddock and, you know, I had seen her for her two previous starts at the Arc and at Champions Day and loved her and saw her and her coat was gone. And I'm not joking. It looked like she lost 200 pounds, or probably exaggerating, but had lost a lot of weight and just did not look like the same animal. And I took her from the tickets and threw her off the tickets and made a very large wager on Golden Horn. And of course that didn't work out so well. The same situation exactly happened here. Because I know I've heard people talk about how Imperial Hint is not a looker, but man, I watched three of the horses in that race. I almost fell over at how good they looked to my eye walking by, just so big, strong, and athletic. Strike Power was that way. Matoli was that way. And Firenze Fire was that way. And then I see this horse who I would have expected to see on a trail up in Lake George that Perrin was going to take a ride on. Slight exaggeration, but not much. And I made an extremely bold play, and the horse just blew me to smithereens. So bad on me. And look, I'm not saying, oh, and that's why you shouldn't look at horses. No, it's signal. It's one piece of information. It's not magic. It's not always going to work. Of all the times I go down and glean that real-time information, it's a net positive on that piece of information for sure. This time, what was really silly about it is, I mean, I guess I didn't really like the horse anyway and then saw that, but it is so important to just know what they look like, and that relative to how Imperial Hint looks, Imperial Hint probably looked similar before he won his two grade ones. Granted, those were not as strong as this race. Boy, it was an impressive performance. I mean, the horse was terrific. Hats off. I just did want to tell my little tale of woe for the listeners before we move on that one.
Yeah, I mean, he ran fast. I'm looking forward to seeing him come back. I don't know when we'll see him again. I didn't hear if he's going to come back for the forego or if he's going to wait a little bit. But no matter what, I'm looking forward to seeing him.
I'm just going to take this opportunity to apologize for the slight technical difficulty that we're having in the show, where you're not missing anything that JK says, but you're getting this little second out. I can normally fix it, go back in editing, but now, especially since we've gone on much longer than the show was meant to go on, I'm not going to be able to do it. Hopefully it's not. I have done it as we're going through a few times, stopping the recording. I don't want to do that anymore. We need to power through. But anyway, apologies about that. I hope it's not too annoying. What else you got from Saturday?
I guess we got to talk about Tacitus and Tax, right? I mean,
I would say a lot Tacitus, of people would say we were nuts to go 40 minutes without talking about the Jim Dandy.
He was impressive. Tacitus, that is. Congratulations to Tax and Randy Hill and Dean Reeves and Danny Gargan. But, you know, look, I don't think anyone's going to argue that Tacitus was best in that race. Just from the start alone, not even counting the bias. So, I'm looking forward to betting him in the Travers. I would imagine that Game Winner is going to take some money. I hope Maximum Security shows up so I can finally get my revenge on him. I've been looking forward to beat him with a horse that I actually like, not Country House. So I thought Tassel was very impressive, and I thought Tax ran well too.
I mean, Tax was terrific, but you got the sense that that was the day for Tax, who scores with a 98 Beyer speed figure. Here's the question that was debated a lot on Twitter, and I'll be shocked if you're not on my side on this one, but that'll make for some good radio. Maybe we can get in our own fight. The idea, there is trouble that horses, the old line, Sean Clancy gave me this line, and it's absolutely true, that the idea of horses sometimes making trouble or staying out of trouble. And Sean's line was, you get in a lot more bad trips in a Yugo than you do a Ferrari. That said, there are some trouble that's just bad luck and tactics that don't work out. To me, fully, Tacitus is bad luck and tactics that don't work out. This is not a slow horse who can't hit holes, who keeps having trouble trips. I mean, just look at the last two races where he was monumentally best, in my opinion, in both. English listeners, I'm not sure what prices are out there, but take a look. I think if you have a chance to bet Travers Antipost, this might be a good time. If you see 7-2, if you see 4-1, if you see 9-2 on Tacitus, I'd take it. And I like those numbers. I mean, maybe I'm crazy, but I feel like those numbers are good even if Maximum Security comes. And if Maximum Security doesn't come, well, you're really going to be getting the best of it. My only concern, I love Tacitus, and I ended up betting him because of the way the track was playing and all this stuff, and just figuring he'd make a big wide move and get the track in his favor. But what I was hoping was he'd have like a subtle bad trip and we might get a price on the tote in the Travers. I think that plan, unfortunately, my friend, is out the window. I worry this trouble was so bad that he may be the co-favorite even with Maximum Security in the race. What do you think is going to happen in terms of the betting for the Travers, assuming everybody shows up?
I don't know. I think he'll probably be third choice. I mean, I think Maximum Security and Game Runner will be the favorites.
I hope you're right.
Up.
I mean, I just feel like when you have that obvious trouble two times in a row, maybe not. But
don't forget the trouble that. Don't forget the trouble that Game Winner had in the Derby. You know that I think people have been waiting to bet back that trip. You know, obviously the last race doesn't really count on such a small field, but it's Baffert, and it's, I don't know, I think he'll be second choice. I think Maximum Security will be favored if he shows up, and I think that Game Winner will be a second choice, and Tacitus will be right there behind him, if maybe right on top of him, but I don't think that he'll be co-favored.
So yeah. If you were to have the opportunity to bet Antipost on Tacitus, what price, we'll do buy, sell, hold in reverse, what price do you think you'd want to plunge at Tacitus right now?
So I'm not trying to dodge the question. I would want a Dutch Game Winner and Tacitus for a return. I mean, I would take.
What return would you take on those two? That's an interesting way of looking at life.
I think I would take even 4-5 even money on those two.
You can get that, I'm sure. I'm sure you can get that, and you won't be able to get that on the day. But I think in the future markets, you could probably get that. Now, folks who have the civilized opportunity for fixed odds sports betting and people or fixed odds horse betting, excuse me, this is a huge part of it, guys. And you know, that was so much fun doing the filling out the props. This was the first week I actually competed in the Thoroughbred Idea Foundation props contest. And as fun as those props are, and as cool of a way as that is of looking at the world, the real benefit of fixed odds betting on horses is we should be able to be betting on the Travers now. And how much more fun does that make the sport to follow? Not just the gambling aspect, but the sport to follow, when we could already be looking at horses to potentially bet for next year's Kentucky Derby at if they do the pricing right, at potentially reasonable prices, and not least of which is having an eye towards the big stakes races that are coming up, you know, Chancelot and the King's Bishop and things like that. This is the world that fixed odds betting on horses can open up to us, and it's going to be so good for the whole industry. This is just another example. And I feel, you know, we have whatever it is, 5-10% of the listenership comes from UK and Ireland, and that number seems to be growing all the time. And how envious am I of them that this isn't just a theoretical conversation, that it's something that they can actually participate in. You approach the world a little differently, as we've talked about, JK. You're more selection-oriented than value-oriented. How involved would you imagine yourself if we had the opportunity to make anti-post bets at fixed odds on future races?
Very. I think that I would try to always I would try to find some value from 2 or 3 weeks out or 5 weeks out or whatever it is. And then that gives you a lot more leverage and a lot more equity to work with on the day. You know what I'm saying? Like I would love to get Tacitus at 6-1 right now or 5-1 or whatever. I mean, I know that's not the case. I'm just giving an example. And then I can come back on the day and I already have that bet on him at 5-1 and I can look elsewhere for other value in other places, or I can run him second and exact this, things like that. I just think that it allows a horse player to be a little bit more flexible in how they want to express their opinion.
The other great point you make is fixed odds betting won't hurt tote betting, in my opinion. It'll make more people look at more races and create arbitrage opportunities, and you'll see more money in the markets. And especially over time, if we can ever get pricing stuff addressed, it could become a real rising tide lifts all ships thing for racing. Anyway, end of speech about that. I was going to let you fall on your sword. I gave you a little bit of an opening, but I don't get to do this very often. But my all-time record in head-to-heads with you has now improved to 17-189 because I absolutely wiped the floor with you in your own props contest. How'd you let that happen?
I set you up for success. I made a bunch of props that I thought you would do well with.
It is my birthday.
It was
coming
funny
up.
Is I heard you and Pat make fun of one of mine. I mean, you guys weren't making fun, but it was kind of making fun of the Firenze Fire Do Share one. They were like half a length apart from each other.
Pat, that was Pat. He was just pointing out there was the disparity in the morning line. That's all. I don't think it was anything.
Yeah, it's hard to do those props, by the way, without having morning lines.
Really hard. I told you that was the hardest work I've done in a long time was putting those props together, and I did probably the 80% job, 75% job. You know, if I had to book money on them, I would have put obviously a lot more in them for the nature of what the game is. I didn't think it was necessary to go crazy. But to do that right, like right, you'd really have to go nuts. I thought you did an excellent job. I thought they were very good, and I think the stats bore it out. You had a lot of things in that sweet spot range of, you know, not that many. It's very hard to get 50-50 exactly, but to be between 40 and 60 is hard, and I think you did that consistently throughout.
Yeah, there's some fun ones. I the saddle cloth one was you know, I obviously got the idea a little bit from Monmouth, but I thought that one was really fun. You know, I thought just kind of it kind of takes into account the entire day, and it takes into account both coasts. So I think as a real bet, it gives you a full day of action and like you and really concern and care about, you know what I mean? I just thought
100%.
It's kind of like fantasy football where like every football game that's on, something in that game kind of matters to you. I thought it was kind of a fun one to do.
I loved it. I'd love to see them keep those up. And I think they have folks to do the lines the rest of the way, which is good news. We won't have to, we won't have to struggle with that, but I'll definitely be playing along the way and hopefully we'll have a chance to have Pat on soon. What did you think of the rest of our analysis? Did we say anything else to make your teeth hurt when you were listening?
No, you guys did a good job. I liked listening to it. Like I said, it's fun to listen to the show when I'm not on it.
I agree. I really had fun in England when you pinch hit for me, listening to you and Paul and that great turf conversation you had, and you and Nick Tamaro talking about process and all that stuff. It is fun stuff. Let's talk about Friday for at least a minute before we wrap things up. I do want to talk about highest honors and the Curlin highest honors wins with a 94. And ask this in a cheeky way. Is there a horse who ran in the Curlin who you could see being on your tickets on Travers Day? Not necessarily in the Travers, but on Travers Day.
Oh, what are you going at?
You got me figured out.
No, there is a horse that I can see on my tickets, but I can see the horse in the Travers.
Okay.
So
hit me.
And I don't know if are you thinking about Rowayton?
No. I'll do mine after you do yours, but give me your Rowayton case.
I like in the Travers.
Oh, you like, really? Oh, I don't know about that. I don't think the horse really does want to go that far, but
well,
I just thought.
Like he wanted to be glued to the rail either.
I agree with that. And that's why I'd be interested in underneath cutting back in the King's Bishop to the Monster. That was my thought.
I get it. You know what's funny? And I have to say this now because I've seen like four people on Twitter make fun of like a couple of people on our show say I get it, like because we say I get it, and they think that that's like weird. I don't
I don't understand that. Is that weird to you?
When I
someone's
get it.
talking about
I get
a point, and then I say, "Oh, I get it. I get what you're saying."
Yeah, it's me.
I don't understand why that's bizarre to me. I just wanted to ask you.
I'm not sure my joke landed with just saying it right back to you. I do understand. Part of it's the vibe of the show. You know, we're not looking to argue. We're certainly not make anybody look silly who comes on here and gives us their time. And I think we feel that way about each other as well. So if you're going to disagree, I get it is a way to disagree respectfully. So I think that's a piece of it. But I also just think there's something to acknowledging a point. As we were talking about before, if you're going to be like one way about this life, you know, good luck. And to be able to recognize that there are perspectives other than your own, I think that's a really healthy, smart thing. And so I think that's where that comes from. But you like looking at bikinis right back in the Travers, even though we already talked about those three killers who are going to be in there?
I mean, look, looking at bikinis, but now if looking at bikinis is going to be 3-1 in the race, then no, I don't.
No.
But looking at bikinis is going to be
30-1 will be closer. Yeah.
And going to be forgotten based on that performance. And the way that horse was coming into it was training really well. I had heard that Chad really, really likes the horse. Yeah. I just felt like there'll be some value there. And he's an underneath type or a B type in pick fours. And I'm not going to like single the horse, but I just think I think he could run well.
It's interesting, and you know we'll see what they decide to do.
But here's the thing, though. I when I say I get it, I do get it. I'd bet him if he ran in the Allen Jerkins too.
Right.
I think he's a good horse, and I think wherever he shows up, I trust in Chad to put him in the right spot, and I would use him in either race.
Did I give away a bingo square before? Did I say King's Bishop?
You did say King's Bishop.
I let you go on it. Let me go on it.
Even though I owed you one since you tried to get me for yeah, no, or whatever.
The bingo squares are dropping like flies. It's funny. I didn't realize I said it until you said the correct name of the race. It's an interesting decision to see what they try to do. But yeah, the point I think that we're both making is definitely a horse that suffered from running on the part of the track that was not the place to be. So anything else did you have from that race? Did you have a comment on Rowayton?
No, I thought that's where you were going with the cutback. No, the only thing I will say from last week that I think we probably need to discuss is Annals of Time is back. And he could be dangerous in the turf division when he finds his way back to a stakes race. He was very impressive in that allowance in the fourth race on Wednesday. And he's obviously shown his ability as a grade one winner already. And I think he's going to be dangerous when he gets back in a stakes company.
I like that notion. Certainly a horse that I've always been a fan of. So you're telling me Chad Brown has a major contender in the turf division. And in other news, the Sun will set in the West tonight.
Yeah, and the horse is owned by Klarovich Stable.
How good?
As well, so how much fun is it going to be when him and Bricks and Mortar are in a race together?
How good was the other buzzed about Chad over the weekend? Was that Sunday as well? I've already lost track of my days. I'm talking about new and improved as the one who walked out of there. Another one that had the sort of, oh, this is a rocket ship buzz about and ran extremely well despite that bad beginning and not particularly with a pace setup either. Another one for stakes and Chad Brown coming up, in my opinion.
I would not disagree with you at all about that. And apparently that one was well meant, and apparently there's more to come from what I understand. He's got some other good ones. I don't know names. I just know he's got some other good ones that are coming as well.
Well, we have taken the full hour or close to it. We could spend more time. This is the kind of weekend you're going to hear a lot of from us saying that was the weekend the rail was dead. And rather than just flag up horses who spent time on the dead rail, though we could certainly make a quick mention of Stanhope, but rather than go over that whole list, I think it'd be more instructive. Just keep in mind as we tout horses and coming from, you know, 3 and 4 weeks from now, when we're giving out horses on the show, there are going to be a lot of horses that we say that about, and we'll just deal with it. We'll deal with it when they're entered back in. I think that's just going to be a bit more efficient Any other thoughts from Saratoga over the weekend or anything else on your mind, JK, before we head off to lunch and try to help Druthers' business? But Druthers' stock is about to pick up from what I understand because Jake Ballas of Black Type Thoroughbreds heading back to town. His business alone will do more than just keep the lights on for the next several months.
Austin had three burgers from Druthers in 3 weeks, so I'm sure Jake will be able to make up for that small dip in their stock. But I like the place. Look at it's every time I go there it rains. By the way, I don't know if let's see if we can if
actually
we can
it looks a little again, gray. I'm looking out the window and it looks a little gray.
My final thought is if you listen to this on Tuesday. Even if you're not in town, do us a favor. We don't ask for a whole lot of retweets, but if you can retweet the stuff we've talked about tonight, just so other people on your feed might see the gumbo for horses, you obviously want to have a good turnout there and have as many people there as possible for a good cause. So if you could, even if you're not going to be here, if you could toss a retweet for us, that'd be fun.
Toss a retweet. And if you want to go nuts, just go ahead and you don't have to buy a ticket, but make a small donation. Do something to help out our friends at the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. I learned so much more about their mission last night at the Open Barn event. It was really cool, JK. They had these sort of before pictures of some of these horses, especially ones who were found who were not well cared for. I mean, horses that looked on the verge of that being it for them. And now you're seeing them and their coats are gleaming and they're looking happy and they're, in some cases, not just pasture sound, but being ridden around the ring. Let's promote for sure these next TRF open barn events that are happening in Saratoga because it's also like a cheap, great thing to do with kids. Take them and give them a chance to feed these horses. Obviously, the ones they bring out to the public are super friendly. You know, they're not biters like when American Pharoah bit you. These are going to be horses who are happy to eat from a kid's hand and learn more about this mission because it really is impressive. And when you see it there in the flesh, I'm hanging out with this candy ride. I'm going to write a little blog post about E Candyman, I think was the horse's name, or Candyman E, one or the other. Do you remember that horse at all? JK might have already dropped off the line, which is hilarious in and of itself.
No, I didn't.
Oh, no, it was just stuck on mute.
I just had it muted. I didn't think you were coming back to me, so yeah. I couldn't find the mute button fast enough.
Anyway, do you remember that horse?
I don't.
I'm going to look up the race record. I'm going to write a blog post about it. It's going to be very cool. Anyway, give these people money. They do amazing work. TRFinc.org/players. And if you can join us, all the better. And that's going to do it for this edition of the In the Money Players podcast. Keep checking out InTheMoneyPodcast.com. Lots of great content on there, including some stories, some more writers. Kevin Kilroy from the famous Gang of Fours, who won his NHC seat ultimately. He's got a piece coming up about a Whitney weekend pass that's worth reading. And just so much good stuff. John Camardo, Benny South Street. It's an impressive roster of horse playing talent we've got on there, and we want you to check it out. And hopefully we're going to get some conversations going in the comments over there. That's a short-term goal of mine as well. Lots of fun things coming up. If you're going to be at Saratoga, if you need help finding accommodations for the day, reach out to me. Maybe even for a special opportunity Travers Day, but I have to do a little bit more research before I open that one to the public. Sunday, we've got Speakeasy Sunday up top on the veranda. Come see us there. That'll be fun. I want to thank Jonathan Kinchin. I want to thank the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, 10 Strike Racing, Stats Race Lens, Monmouth Park, Woodbine Racing, Black Type Thoroughbreds, all of our fine sponsors for the help in putting this show together. But most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening. You make the shows fun to do, and your generosity has really helped our partner, the TRF, have a great year. And we want to go ahead and go beyond a great year and make it a spectacular year so they can keep up their important mission for years and years and years to come. That's it. We'll be back later in the week with a couple of shows in the Ring Pedigree podcast. Going to be previewing the sales, looking back at last weekend. We're going to talk about races coming up. We're going to be doing an on-track seminar on Saturday. Duke Matisse will be my guest at 9:30. JK might have one too. We'll make an announcement about that on the next show, but there'll be plenty of opportunities to hang out with the In the Money team. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's business manager is Drew Cotney, fine handicapper also, gave out a $27 horse or something in a blog post he wrote for Woodbine last weekend. I'm Peter Thomas Fornatel. May you win all your photos. Hey, everybody. Just wanted to give a word for our latest partner, Stats Race Lens. This is a product that is definitely worth checking out. You can even get discounts if you use the promo code STATSITM. We're talking about customizable PPs with comprehensive research abilities, video replays, advanced search and notifications, access to Stats True Odds, handicapping angles, and back testing. That's what Scott Coles used to help him win the NHC this year, and he's talked about on this show. It's mobile and tablet friendly. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. And make sure you use the promo code STATSITM, STATSITM.